John Dawson, and welcome to the Gripweed's Inner Grooves podcast. This is the final installment of a two-part program focusing on this release of rare and under-released tracks from the Gripweed's archives. Each member of the band was interviewed, and I'll give their thoughts on this very cool collection. Singer, drummer Kurt Ryle gives some background on the concept of inner grooves.
You know, these are our inner grooves. They're stuff that was held pretty close to the vest for us, wasn't really massively released, isn't really big time available, you know. A lot of it was on the QT. This song was the first version of In Waking Dreams that we gave to Twang Records for a compilation, which I have no idea how many copies of that exist, but I can't imagine it's a lot. I don't think it's too many at all. And then we went and re-recorded it because we weren't 100% satisfied with it, or we thought there's more we could do with the song. And we took the song in a slightly different direction for The Sound Is In You, which is the second version came out on. But this first version is almost like our grunge record. Looking at it now, and when I played it back, I was like, wow, this is so cool. It's so guitar heavy, you know, and it's like rock, you know, that kind of thing. And we were really into that at the time. I remember we were intent at those sessions on amping up those guitars and just making this, like, I think we called it our it's like R.E.M. Monster when they came out with that record. You know, is that, you know, kind of their grunge record. That's kind of what we were doing with this one, unknowingly. But that was, you know, it was kind of in the, you know, in the zeitgeist of the time, or whatever you call it. The, you know, it was in the water. It was what we were drinking and listening to that sort of inspired us and influenced us to do, to, you know, to do that sort of sound at the time. And one thing about the lyrics, which I just remembered recently, was this was an approach to lyric writing that I'd never done before or since. I just watched a movie called Solaris, which is a Russian film. And it was a very intense, cool sci-fi Russian film, kind of a classic. And I was really inspired by it. And the lyrics kind of reflect, you know, kind of this idea of, you know, it's a philosophical thing. And anyway, I couldn't write the lyrics properly somehow. I just couldn't do it. So Rick suggested to me, do what David Bowie does and cut up your phrases. Take your write down your phrases and cut them up and throw them down and just assemble them in any order and write that down and see what happens. And that's what I did. I threw the, you know, I just made up all these phrases and I threw them down and turned into a song, you know? Sight Unseen is an acoustic mix of the version that, the recording that was made for Giant on the Beach back in 04, 05-ish. And we just had done at the time, that album has an enhanced CD, In other words, you pop it into the computer and you got access to a website, and the website lets you have some extra stuff. And so we had put this acoustic mix on there because I don't really know why we did it, but I just thought it would be cool to do. I thought, the song lent itself to being stripped down at the time because the vocals were pretty heavy. And so we did this acoustic mix at the time. It's like, well, let's throw it on the enhanced CD. And so there it sat for, you know, however many years. And somebody, though, had taken that track and put it on the air. They played it on the radio somewhere repeatedly. So we were like, oh, this is cool, you know. Didn't expect that to happen. So that's one of the reasons why that was a good candidate for this disc. Aside from being a very different listening experience than the track that's on Giant on the Beach, the mix that's on Giant on the Beach, this is much more intimate, one acoustic, the voices, and a guitar solo, and that's basically it. You know, it's very spare, but it really has its own flavor and its own power, and it works well in the sequence of tunes, on the sequence of songs on the album, coming after it does after In Waking Dreams. It's a good, you know, kind of come down from the grunge track.
You see the frame but miss the picture. You're a seeker with blind eyes. I couldn't tell you what to look for. Wouldn't know it if I tried. In the rise, breath you take it over me. It's the high and low of the in-between sight unseen. Sight unseen.
Lead guitarist Kristen Pinnell.
There's a really some interesting guitar work on Sight Unseen. That's the song that's basically stripped down, just our harmonies, which it's really great to hear those featured in that track. But there's a guitar solo in that song that is so cool. It was it sounds kind of to me like Brian May, and it's nothing that I've ever done before, and I've never gotten that sound before, and I just really think it's unique, and I'm really proud of that solo because it's so weird, but it works. It works in the context of the song, and to have something sound like Brian May is pretty cool because he's awesome.
I had a discussion with somebody once about, basically it was about the chaos theory and how some people feel, most of them are like engineers or scientists, they feel that if man doesn't intercede in the world, it's going to fly into chaos. If we don't get in there and control things, it's just going to fall apart, you know? There's people out there that maybe they're even listening. They, they agree with this theory, chaos theory. And I just kind of looked at them and went, what about the ocean? You know, what about the rhythm of the tides and the ocean and the way that kind of works its own kind of magic? And what about the universe, you know, and the way things go all on their own, you know? And so that's what that song is about. It's about what you don't see and what you can't control, and you know, that's the good stuff. That's where you want to get to, you know, that kind of that place where it's happening, It's not being controlled. You know? That's where creativity is.
We always, also off Inner Grooves, a track that we do live a lot is We're Not Getting Through. And that song's a blast to play. It sounds like something off a Nuggets record. It's just real high-powered and it's got a big rave up and who chords and harmonies. It's really exciting to play that song. I have so much fun playing it.
That was the first recording of that song. The first band recording of it. That song dates back to the early days of the Gripweeds before Kristen was in the band. Another one that Rick wrote. And at the time it was kind of... He somehow managed to encapsulate... It was almost like a mission statement for the band. At the time, it was like, this is what we want to be, this is what we want to do, this is what we want to become, the kind of music we want to embody, you know? And it was so right on the money for this band with Kristen in it. But when Rick had first written it, when we were in the early days of the Gripweeds where we were just figuring out what we were doing, that band couldn't play it. And it just, whatever reason, it didn't work for that band. So when Kristen joined, she suggested, this is after we had done the first album by this point, and we were looking at songs for the second album and things to do, and she said, you know, why don't you do some of these older songs? And we're kind of like, no, older version of the band, we don't want to go back. And she's like, well, you know, no one knows what they are because they've never been released. They're not out there. And, you know, they've never really even been properly recorded. So, you know, and so both Rick and I were like, you know, you got a point there. So we started going back and revisiting songs like Strange Bird, which is on the second album. That was like the very first Gripweed song, even though it came on the second album. And this song was another one, We're Not Getting Through. And as I said, we finally learned how to play it and interpret it, you know, that it actually suited what we were doing. And I actually even think it's better now. This song is just dynamite live. And when we play it with our new lineup with Dave, it's just absolute killer. Now it just keeps getting better. But this is the first version that appeared on the German single. And Rick will probably say, you know, thought we could do it better. This is a remix, so it sounds way better than it sounded on the single. If you pull up the single sometime, this is like, you know, again, it's like pulling the curtain up. All of a sudden, there's this like massive sound there. So we were able to bring up the fidelity of the track on this new version of it, new mix of it. But talk to Rick about it, and I'm sure he'll say, oh, well, you know, it could be better.
Singer, guitarist, Rick Ryle.
We're Not Getting Through. There's no version of it that I'm 100% with, and they're going to kill me for this, but there isn't. I think we still haven't hit that one 100%. If I could convince the rest of the band to re-record it, I would love to. I can't say that they're going to be able to stand to do it again, so it probably won't happen. But if it were up to me, we would do another version of it. No version is right.
I hate it when we finish a whole song and somebody goes, nah, let's re-record the whole thing. It's like,
I listen to it and go, yeah, it's cool. I can't wait to play it live. That's where, you know, for me, it can make it, you know, whatever. We get to interpret these songs every time we play, you know.
Bassist Dave DeSantis.
When my friends who haven't seen us play, because we play so far away, not from my area in Long Branch, they ask me, like, what do you guys sound like? And in a nutshell, I would say The Who meets The Birds.
Well, When we play live, when we practice, when we have a rehearsal, we tend to start the rehearsal with some kind of jam. We just go into whatever comes to mind. And sometimes we record those, you know, and sometimes they're like, wow, that was really cool. All right, well, let's get on to the, you know, the business at hand and rehearsing for the show or whatever. So, yeah, we you know, we do kind of jam sometimes, and it's fun and healthy to do that, and musically keeps you kind of on your toes. It's good. So when we were working on this double album, Strange Change Machine, there were, you know, over 20 songs, and they're very structured. The album is very, you know, structured in a way. They're pop songs. They have a bridge, chorus, and verses, and, you know, they've got well-defined solos, and everything's kind of worked out, and it's, you know, we worked this album very hard to make it something special, and we kind of felt that the balance of the album would be we could achieve a better balance by putting in a couple of non-scripted pieces, just like we included an acoustic song, acoustic instrumental on that record, to give the album a balance so that you got a listening experience, and it comes down to sequencing where, you know, those songs, a harder, heavier, faster song plays better after you've heard a softer, slower one. You know, it comes bounding out of the speakers as opposed to, you know, bounding out of the speakers after you've just been pummeled by the song before. You know, you've got this, by dynamics, you're creating a musical dynamic of light and shade and movement and loud and soft when you do that sort of stuff. And so that's why we thought, why don't we just try recording a jam session? And then we could, you know, take bits of it and stick it on the record, you know, and sort of edit it in. It'd be cool. You know, that's what I was thinking.
I think most of it came from me, in as much as I love to improvise, and I love to have practices where we start off just playing whatever comes into our minds, because the Grip Weeds is such a song-oriented, tight parts kind of group. There's harmony parts, there's guitar bits. Everything is parts and parts and parts. Really well crafted, you know, like the Beatles records. Very, extremely specific. It turns into that. So as a sort of yin and yang to that, I often like to urge the band to, let's just kind of jam a little bit. Let's do something really loose. And Sun Raga has a theme in it that I always used to play before Astral Man. There were a lot of times where there'd be a jam before Astral Man, because Astral Man is in the key of D. And just to get that sort of different feel, we would do this thing. And the main theme of Sun Raga, which is down, bow, no, 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 that was already kind of out there. And we would play that little piece before Astral Man. So there was this one time in the studio where we just, all right, let's record ourselves doing one of these jam songs. And it kind of was that piece, but that piece really long, and we kind of followed it where it went. I would like to see us do more of this, not make albums of this stuff, but have, you know, maybe a track or two where there's more of this kind of loose thing in it, you know, maybe crafted more than that one, not 10 minutes of that, but I could see like a 3-minute song or 4-minute song that maybe has some structure, but within that structure there's this kind of thing like this. It's good for the Grip Weeds to loosen up a little bit.
Music is a perfect allegory for living life in the moment and not getting into the past or future. It's almost like being a dog. You know, you're just, you know, reacting to sensations, you know, and just kind of, you're just being. That's what music is. You don't listen to music with the intention to get to the end. You listen to music for the experience of the moment, you know? And that's what it is. It's very, very cool. So that's, as a recording artist, that's the place you want to be in. And if you can get there, then you're going to make the best music that you can make. I can't say it's the best music, period. But, you know, that goes for when you write a song and you record it. You want to get into that, as a musician, you want to get into that head where you're not thinking and overworking. You're just doing it, and it's coming out of you. You can't stop it, you know. And that's kind of what Sun Ra Ga represents to me.
There's usually an excursion into some song, some jam that goes on, either in the beginning or sometime throughout the night. You know, we try to really focus on what we have to do because we have so little time to accomplish what we need to do. Usually we're like, okay, let's get working, you know.
This is the entire version. I do believe there was a take two, but this is it. The entire, how long is it? 10 minutes? Something like that?
It's good soundtrack music, I guess.
And the title I thought was pretty fun too. It was from, I had written a song, Sun Shower, off of Strange Change Machine, and it was part of a suite of songs. And this jam was going to be excerpted and stuck into that suite of songs. So we're looking for a name for it, and since it was kind of the Sun Shower Suite, as we were calling it, and we thought it was kind of like a raga, because the raga form is an Indian form, and it's very long, and it goes through various forms as the piece goes along. It starts kind of slow, builds up, and then at the end it kind of blasts, and then it's done. And so the song does have a slight form that resembles a raga. And so, but then it's also kind of free form. So I thought Sun Ra, you know, like that performer, kind of that free form jazz guy, Sun Ra Ga. Well, sequencing, it's called sequencing, and sequencing a record is, I think it's a bit of an art to, you know, to get a sequence that's very effective, because what you're basically doing is you're trying to, you know, kind of sell the record right from the start. When someone presses play, you want them to go, wow, you know, that's really cool, I got to hear another one. You know, so that's really what the first song is all about. And that's your chance to kind of, you know, make that. It's like a first impression. It's almost like an interview, you know. Make that first impression. You know, I kind of always look at vinyl, you know, albums, LPs, as almost a perfect form to listen to a record. It's a really good length, it's a perfect length of time to have somebody expect them to be into what you're doing. And there's a really nice thing about a record. It's got a side one and a side two. And there was a natural, it gives you a natural break in the listening so that you have to flip the record over, you know? And in that break, it's almost like hitting a reset button where, okay, we're back to track one, you know? And so the way we approached sequencing Inner Grooves was like a record. In fact, we actually stuck in some record noise in the middle of the album to get that natural break so that the next song is once again a new, you know, a start again. We got a very cohesive album out of something that was recorded over, you know, so many years. And it actually, you know, has a listen. You can listen to it like just a regular record. It doesn't feel like a compilation so much. It actually feels like a full album, which is kind of neat.
Some collections that people put out, they're real lo-fi kind of demo-y stuff. This sounds like as good as any of our releases. You know, the quality, the sound quality is amazing, and the arrangements are really creative and, you know, doing different versions of some of our hits.
I'm just very glad we did it. I'm generally not in favor of, you know, I'm not so in love with my own stuff that, or our own stuff, you know, everything we ever do should be put out. But on the other hand, you know, we've done so much at this point, and, you know, there was a backlog of cool stuff that I think people would enjoy. And so far, we've gotten some feedback. There's people who really like this record and think it works well as a record, which is kind of shocking because, you know, all these songs are from different periods, different styles. I never would have thought that this would hang together as an album. The variety of music on this is extremely wide, and I think that's kind of a good way for us to approach a record next time.